Esme's next class was just down the hall. Baron was there when she came out of the door.
Lieutenant, good to see you again.
His eyes said more. Esme felt a warm glow as if she'd stepped into a spotlight. She could feel Vericor's interested gaze on her back.
Morning, Ensign. Glad to be off Fold Cos?
They tell me they'll put me on a line ship after this, assuming I pass all the courses.
You passed the hardest back on Cos, and Eulis knows it.
I would have preferred things in the opposite order. Training before performance. Though you did the same trick with command, only better.
Brunn appeared suddenly at Esme's side.
Hi there. Oh, introduce me, Lieutenant Sueza, to this most attractive young ensign. Unless that is you're keeping him for yourself.
Baron flushed, and Esme could feel her own ears heating up.
This is Ensign Serrano. Ensign, this is Brunn Meager.
She didn't have to give a pedigree. Everyone knew it. Brunn practically shoved in front of Esme.
You must be Admiral Serrano's grandson. I've heard a lot about you. Do you have a few minutes?
Esme didn't. It was time for her next class. She ignored the desperate look Baron gave her and abandoned him to his fate. If he couldn't handle one dizzy blonde... But she had trouble concentrating on tactics for the first time in her life. Brunn was beautiful, in a way she had never been beautiful. And she had that ability to attract almost anyone. Even Esme had liked her, in spite of disapproving. It was impossible, it seemed, to stay distant from her. Naturally, she would like Baron. Charming, handsome, talented. And naturally, Baron... She yanked her mind back to the lecture and realized that Vericor had noticed her distraction, which made it even worse. She made it through class after class, dragging her attention back again and again from the thought of Baron and Brunn. If this was what love did, she told herself grimly, no wonder they cautioned officers against it. Back on Cos, it had seemed simple. Her feeling for Baron made her stronger, more confident, happier, and her performance had soared. But that was the first burst of feeling. This was something else, not helpful at all. Was he having the same problem? She tried to think what her therapist would have said, but none of the phrases she remembered helped at all. At the evening meal, Esme was hunched morosely over her tray.
Lieutenant?
She felt something clench and release in her chest.
Ensign, Baron, how was your first day?
Interesting. When Eulis started in on me, I wasn't sure what to do, but then I figured out what he was driving at.
I could have clobbered him.
No, he was right, and I did make an interesting demonstration for the class. I would bet they don't have someone like me in every class, unless they import them especially. I wonder if that's why I got this course. Nah. But you, I hear you've been taking one course on top of another. Are you getting any sleep at all?
Esme felt her ears going hot, even though she knew it was an innocent inquiry into her health.
I'm doing fine, as long as I don't do much but study.
Oh, I wasn't going to interrupt you. I know this is important to you. I just hoped...
I know. I'm just... You know, it's been a while.
Baron ate some peas, then something orange that had probably started life in the squash family.
I saw you yesterday when I came in, going to some class... Seems like you're getting along well with the other officers.
Trying to. All that you told me about the difference in cultures, it helps. Though I still catch myself about to apologize or explain far too often.
Glad to be of service. I was going to ask...
Well, I'd hope to find my favorite ensign for a dinner companion. But he's already engaged.
Hello, Sarah Meager.
Brunn. Nobody calls me Sarah Meager or Ms. Meager, but people who want to keep me from doing things... You don't mind if I join you, do you? I promise my watchdogs will keep a respectful distance.
Of course.
Baron stood while Brunn found a seat across from Esme, exactly where Esme did not want those clear blue eyes.
How did the exam go, Esme? Administrative procedures, wasn't it? Sounds deadly boring to me. Forms filling, isn't it?
A bit more than that. Forms filling is part of it, but then you have the decisions of which form and to what office it should be sent. Filling it out correctly doesn't help if you've sent the wrong level of form or sent the right form to the wrong office.
Oh, deadly boring. My sympathies. I hope my heckling you that morning didn't hurt your performance.
No, I did all right.
All right being number one in the class. Don't hide your light, Lieutenant.
Oh, good for you. Though I can't see you as a forms filler. I suppose into every life a few forms must fall.
Esme could not stay annoyed, not with that combination of interest and goodwill beaming at her from across the table.
I thought it was boring, but it was a requirement.
So you topped out. What did I expect? Are you sure you won't come into Q-Town, the both of you, and celebrate?
I can't. The tactics final is in 2 days, and our work group is studying tonight and tomorrow night.
Well then, Ensign, do you have a final coming up?
No, but...
Then you can come, surely. If you're not in Lieutenant Sweezer's tactics class, then she's not going to be spending time with you, and not that she'd cradle Rob anyway.
Sure. I'm hardly an infant, Brun, but yes, I'll be your escort, since your watchdogs will be along to ensure my good behavior.
Esme watched them go with feelings not so much mixed as churned. She did have a tactics study group meeting, but she had hoped for a few more minutes with Baron, in which she could ask him about his interpretation of the rules governing personal relationships between officers not of the same rank or in the same chain of command. He had grown up in Fleet. He was used to the rules. If he thought there was nothing wrong, there probably wasn't anything wrong. Baron eyed the speaker's daughter as they walked through to the base gates.
Dangerous waters.
Professional officers did not mix with families. The shadowy aura of undue influence brooded over any such liaison. Still, common courtesy to a guest of the fleet demanded that he accompany her, and her security detail. He would much rather have talked to Esme. They had things to discuss. And anyway, she looked tired, strained, and he wanted to help her ease that strain. She had been trying so hard for so long. She was on the right track now, but... His fingers twitched, imagining the softness of her hair, the way he could soothe the tension from her neck.
So, you knew Lieutenant Sweezer on the Kosciusko?
Yes.
Is she always so... stiff?
Stiff? She's hardworking, professional.
Dull?
You can't mean that.
No, I don't mean that. But I wanted to meet her, to talk to her, and she's always so upright and formal. Not to mention she never seems to stop studying. She's at the top in just about every class. What more does she want?
What any of us wants, to be the best.
Baron was aware of his spine growing slightly more rigid and wondered why.
It's so different. I've been around Royal Space Service officers for years, and they're not at all like you.
Because they weren't really military. But that was not something to say when Brun was being trailed by six of the Royal Security's finest.
I don't know why all this is necessary. Professional competence I can understand, but the rules are ridiculous.
Which rules?
Oh, you know, all this formality in class, standing when the instructor enters and saluting all the time. Everything divided by rank.
Baron didn't feel like explaining millennia of military tradition to a privileged civilian who was in a mood to dislike it anyway.
There are reasons, but if you don't like it, why did you come?
Admiral Serrano recommended it, over my father's objections, in fact. She said I would benefit from the chance to develop my special talents in a controlled environment.
That sounds like a quote.
You know, Admiral. Oh, that's right. You are Serrano. So... You also know Harris, I imagine.
Admiral Serrano is my grandmother. Commander Serrano is one of my cousins.
No need to go into that. Brun took his arm in a way that made him distinctly uncomfortable.
Well, then, we'll be friends. Now let's go have some fun.
Baron thought longingly of Esme, hard at work, no doubt, in her quarters. Brun had developed a habit of stopping by Esme's quarters every day or so for what she termed a friendly chat. Esme did her best to be polite, though she resented the time it cost her, and even more the fact that Brun seemed to consider herself qualified to comment on everything in Esme's life.
Your hair. Have you ever considered having it rerouted?
Esme's hair had been an issue since childhood. Before she could stop herself, she had run a hand over it, trying to smooth it down.
No.
Brun cocked her own gold head to one side.
It would probably help. You've got quite nice bones.
I have quite a nice lot of work to do, too, if you don't mind.
Esme was not sure which was worse, the insults or the casual way Brun slouched out, apparently not the least offended. One evening, Brun arrived with Baron, who made some excuse and left. casting a lingering glance that Esme wished she knew how to interpret. Brunn settled herself on Esme's bunk as if she owned it.
He's nice.
More than nice.
Esme tried unsuccessfully not to resent Brunn's proprietary tone. Just what had Baron and Brunn been doing?
Handsome, courteous, clever. Too bad he's only an ensign. If he were your rank, he'd be perfect for you. You could fall for him.
Esme was uneasily aware that her ears felt warm.
I don't want to fall for anyone in that sense. We're colleagues.
Is Alta Plano one of those places where no one can talk about sex?
One can. Polite people, however, do not.
Sorry, but it must make it hard to talk about people and to people. I mean, how do you indicate preference?
I had none. I left my homeworld quite young.
That wasn't much better, but she couldn't think of anything that would help. Brunn buffed her fingernails on her vest and examined them critically.
So when you met attractive men or women, you had only instinct to help you? And they say the men are the inarticulate ones.
That's rude.
Is it? If it seems so to you, I'm sorry I didn't intend it that way. We don't have the same rules, you see.
You must have some.
Well, it would be rude to discuss the grittier bits with someone who is not a friend. Or while eating.
Despite herself, Esme wondered what Brunn might mean by grittier bits.
And it would be rude to comment on someone's genetic makeup as revealed in their... I'm not sure what term wouldn't offend you. Body parts? Equipment?
Genetic makeup?
Whether they're a registered embryo or not. And what the code is.
You mean that's visible?
Of course. There's the registration mark and the code number. How else are you going to be sure... Oh, you don't do that.
Well, I certainly don't have any registration marks or numbers on me.
The thought made Esme's skin twitch, but curiosity was a worse torment.
Where?
Lower left abdomen. Want to see?
No.
I didn't mean that. Surely you have... I mean, you're older than I am.
What I do is none of your business, and I plan to keep it that way.
Brunn opened her mouth and shut it again, then gave a little shrug that irritated Esme as much as anything she might have said. She fished in one of her pockets and brought up a tangle of wire with a few plastic beads on it.
Here. You know what this is?
Haven't a clue.
According to Ty, it's a good luck charm. I thought it was a chunk of obsolete electronics.
Esme gave the little object a better look, then grinned.
What?
Well, it's a good luck charm only under certain circumstances. That is, this is the sort of thing they gave us when we started the senior scan course. You were supposed to hang it up. Did Ty mention that?
Yes, above my desk, from the lamp bracket.
Mm-hmm. What it is, underneath the distractions of bent wire and pretty beads, is a scan device. Along about week 6, if you were doing your work, you would suddenly realize it had been transmitting everything you did and said, and you'd look up. Everyone did. And that picture of your sudden revelation went into the class scrapbook. The earlier, the better luck. They calculate the mean, and if you beat the mean, you got extra points, depending on how early you were.
You mean it... spying on me?
Well, you knew you were under surveillance.
I hate it.
Brunn flung herself down in a gesture that reminded Esme of a child's petulant flounce.
So, you agreed.
I agreed to have the stupid bodyguards around, not to have them putting illicit scan devices in my room. Damn them.
Esme felt much older than this spoiled girl.
They're doing their job, and you're not making it easier.
Why should I?
Grow up.
It wasn't what she'd meant to say, but she had been thinking it, and she couldn't hold it back any longer. To her surprise, Brunn whitened, as if Esme had hit her.
I'm very sorry to have bothered you.
She was up and out the door before Esme could say anything. Esme stared at the shut door a long moment. Should she apologize? Altiplano manners, demanding apology for almost everything, quarreled with Serrano advice not to apologize too much. She wished she could talk to Baron about it, but she had to finish the calculations for a project in support planning. She forced herself to concentrate on the work, with the consoling thought that perhaps Brunn would no longer want to be on her team. But that hope disappeared when the study team assignments came out. Brunn had managed, by whatever means the daughter of the Speaker of the Grand Council could use, to get herself assigned to Esme's team in the Escape and Evasion course. Esme told herself that was unfair. It might not have taken any deviousness at all. Perhaps she'd just asked, and they'd given. Brunn's demeanor gave no clue. She gave her usual impression of complete unconcern.
Your problem today is to assess the security problem associated with moving a high-risk individual from this room to the shuttle port, which is here.
A map graphic came up on the screen.
You have available the materials in the box on your table. You are briefing the head of the security detail in 45 minutes. Go.
The first thing to do, the class rules declared, was to open the envelope in the box and find out who was commanding this exercise. To Esme's relief, it was neither Brunn nor herself. Lieutenant Marden, who had, though hastily, at least read the first assignment, seemed to have a basic grasp of the topic so far, as he handed out the materials to Esme, Brunn, and Varricor. They all set to work, and their presentation won a passing grade, though not a high one. Brunn's failure to recognize a potential threat dropped their score, and Eulis was unforgiving.
The point of working as a team is for all of you to combine skills and knowledge, not to hide in your own narrow area of responsibility. Any of the rest of you could have noticed that Ms. Meager had ignored the possibility of an aerial attack on the motor route, and should have.
Esme felt the sting of that. She had wondered why Brunn didn't mention it, and she had said nothing, since she was trying to arrange the resources she supposedly had, none of which included anything she knew could take out air cars. But Eulis's greatest scorn fell on Lieutenant Marden as their commander. By the time he was through, Esme was afraid Marden would be in shreds on the floor. As it was, he disappeared rapidly after the lab and showed up again only at dinner. Esme took her tray to his table.
I should have said something. I did wonder about air, but since I didn't have any resources to deal with an air attack...
And that was in my packet. If and only if someone mentioned it. I could call for reinforcements. I thought that meant I could mention it myself, but as you heard, that's not what it meant at all. I'm not really hungry. Sorry to lower your ratings average.
Don't worry about that. I think we're all too worried about stepping on each other's territory. I wonder if all the other groups had the same problem.
Well, from what I hear, no one got a satisfactory, let alone a commended. But I feel really stupid.
I don't think...
Do you think we'll have the same teams for the field exercise?
Varricor appeared at the table.
I hope not. Getting the Speaker's daughter through it safely is going to make it harder on us. Harder on you in particular, Sweeza.
Oh, I don't know. She has no military background, but she is smart and willing.
And just about defines impulsiveness, from what I hear.
Varricor reached for the condiment tray and sprinkled Gallus sauce generously over his entire plate. The sharp fumes went up Esme's nose.
Sorry. I forget what this can do to sensitive noses. Mine went years ago.
She is the Speaker's daughter.
Well, yes. She's also something of a celebrity, so she can't expect not to be talked about. She's always on some news flash or other. You know they have a team here covering her training?
She can't help that. They're always after prominent people, and she is good looking.
She's flat out spectacular. But I can't see her sneaking across anything unobserved, can you?
She got from Rotterdam back to Rockhouse Major.
Yes, back when no one imagined a girl like that would work her passage on an ag ship. Now they know, and you can bet she won't do that again. Do you follow the news flashes, Esme?
No.
Esme had never paid much attention to the gossipy news flashes, with their emphasis on fashion and celebrity.
Well, if you had, you'd have seen Brunn Meager in everything from formal gowns to skin suits, posing elegantly on a horse or lounging by a picturesque beach. Flat pics of her are probably in more lockers than anyone but actual StoryCube stars.
Great. Someone else who thought she was astoundingly beautiful. Esme could picture every flaw in that face and body. Not that there were many.
But except for the daring rescue of the most noble Lady Cecilia, nothing I've read suggests she had any real sense. So now we're stuck with her.
If the teams are the same, maybe they aren't.
Maybe they aren't. But I'll bet Esme ends up on the same team. They'll want to put another woman on her team, and who else would they put? Taris? Don't make me laugh. Taris wouldn't have a chance with Brunn Meager. No, they'll put the best they have. And that's you, my dear.
Varricor bowed, grinning. Esme felt embarrassed. How could she deal with this? It did not help that Brunn chose that moment to appear at their table.
Oh, it won't do you any good to flirt with Sweeza, but you could always flirt with me.
Varricor spread his hands, rolled his eyes, and then mimed a swoon. It was funny, but Esme was too conscious of the vivid intensity next to her to enjoy it. Brunn turned to her with a more serious expression than usual.
Could I talk to you a bit?
Esme was painfully aware of the stares of the others.
Sure.
I know I did something wrong, but not what? How could I arrange air cover when we didn't have any resources? And why should I have worried about it, when the information we were given didn't mention any such threat?
A technical problem she could answer. Esme quickly outlined the logic behind their low score. Brunn nodded, apparently paying attention, and Esme warmed to her again.
So, even if there's no evidence to indicate a certain kind of threat, you still have to counter it?
You have to assume your intelligence is incomplete. It always is.
But if you're being too cautious, you can't get anything done. You have to act, even before you know everything.
Yes, but with an awareness of what you don't know and its implications.
And it's not so much what you don't know as what you think you do know. For instance, that no mention of an aerial threat means no aerial threat, or no mention of piracy in a sector means there are no pirates. It's the assumptions that will get you killed.
I see. I'll try to do better next time. But I have to say, I'm better at reacting quickly than seeing invisible possibilities.
When Esme got up to leave, Brunn trailed along instead of heading for the ball courts with the others, and Esme sighed internally. She was tired already and had at least 4 hours of studying to do. If Brunn insisted on talking to her, she would be up late again, and her energy was running out.
Look, I know you're busy, but this shouldn't take long, and I really don't know where else to go.
Come on in. What's wrong?
There's something wrong with Master Chief Vecchi.
Wrong? What kind of wrong?
Well, right in the middle of lecture today, he suddenly didn't make sense. He was telling us how to secure a line on a derelict in zero gravity, and then he got it backwards.
How would you know?
I read the book. His book, actually. Safety Techniques in Space Rescue.
It slipped his mind. Everyone makes mistakes sometimes.
But he didn't know it. I mean, he went right on explaining things wrong. And when one of the Jigs asked if he was sure, Vecchi blew up. He got very red, he walked out, and when he came back, he said he had a headache.
Maybe.
It's not the first time. A week ago, he actually inserted a Briggs pin upside down.
Testing you?
No, it was his own line. And he was about to move on it when one of the junior instructors, Kim something, a tough little woman, half my size, but she can haul me up one-handed, and she did. Anyway, she noticed Vecchi's mistake and fixed it.
Esme couldn't think why this was her problem, except that anything that bothered Brunn was her problem.
It bothered her, I could tell. She watched everything else he did, checked it all. Not the usual cross-checks, but as if he were a student.
How old is Vecchi?
What, are you thinking he's just gotten old? He's rejuved, I know that. He's one of the first enlisted rejuves.
When?
I don't have his medical records. How would I know?
I just wondered. Maybe it's wearing off.
It doesn't work that way.
Esme raised her eyebrows and waited.
My father, he's rejuved, so is mother. They're friends. So I naturally know how it works.
And?
Well, the usual reason for repeating a rejuve is physical. The people I know who've had more than one certainly didn't have any mental problems. Their personalities don't change, and they're just as alert.
Well, wasn't that earlier kind of rejuvenation associated with mental degeneration?
Only if you tried to repeat it. Mother's second cousin or something did that, and it was horrible. Mother tried to keep me away from her, but you know little kids. I thought there must be something special in that suite if they wanted me out of it. So I sneaked in.
So, is Vecchi anything like your mother's cousin?
Not exactly. Not as severe, anyway. You don't suppose they've made a mistake and gave him the wrong kind of rejuve procedure, do you?
I don't know. It would help if we knew more about rejuvenation and also about the procedure used on Vecchi.
I thought you could do something since you're in fleet.
Not dig into his personnel and medical records. I have no reason to see them, and it's against regulations to snoop.
Not even unofficially?
No, I'm not going to ruin my career to satisfy your curiosity. If Vecchi is impaired, someone in his chain of command will notice. If I observe something myself, I can report it. But I cannot and will not attempt to snoop in his records. You can report it to, whoever's commanding over there. Who's a senior instructor?
A Commander Priallo, but she's on leave somewhere.
Well, find someone else, whoever's her junior.
I'd think you'd care.
I do care, but I have no right to intervene. This needs to go to his commander. I suppose you could tell the Commandant.
Maybe I will.
Relieved that she was gone, Esme put Brunn's worries out of her mind and tackled her assignments. When the field exercise team assignments came out the next day, she found Vericourt was right. Brun was on her team, and she had the smallest team of all, because her security would have to come along.
How will that work? Will they really let her be roughed up? Or will they interfere in the exercise? And what will that do to the scoring?
Meanwhile, Brun maintained an indecent level of energy and enthusiasm. She learned content as fast as anyone Esme had ever known. Esme wondered if her intellectual capacity had ever been pushed near its limit. She did not, however, seem able to learn the attitudes that were by now second nature to those young officers for whom they were not first nature. Reprimand slid off her impenetrable confidence. Suggestion and example alike had no effect. Later in the mess hall, Vericourt was as dismissive as ever.
She's a dilettante, but what else could we expect from someone of her background? She takes nothing seriously, least of all fleet culture.
Anton Levati, a cousin of the Levati with whom Esme had served on Despite, shook his head.
She takes us seriously enough, but she's not one of us, and she knows it. She wants us to be serious while she has fun.
He had his own team for the field exercise, and they were well up the chart on the evaluations for the preliminary exercises. Esme's team performance was only middling. Brun fluctuated between brilliant and maddening, and her security could not commit emotionally as team members were supposed to do and still be guards. They had taken almost twice as long as the fastest team in several exercises. Esme began to dread the field exercise itself, 4 days of intense and dangerous work in the Badlands west of the base. She was reasonably sure that Brun's guards wouldn't let her be killed, but that left her and Jig Medders to do the work of an entire team. 2 days before the exercise, she left a lecture on ship systems maintenance and found a message on her personal comm unit. Lieutenant Commander Ulis wanted to see her at her earliest convenience. Since she had an hour between classes, that meant right now. About 10 meters from Ulis's office, she stopped. The office door was ajar.
You have to see that it's impossible.
Why?
Esme paused, wishing the door had shut firmly.
Because you're already the target of assassins. The field exercise is by nature dangerous, and it's also impossible to secure. All it would take is one person, just one, with the right skills to pick you off.
You mean to tell me that on a base covered with fleet personnel that you can't even let me do a simple field exercise?
Brun evidently expected to shame Ulis into changing his mind. That wouldn't work.
I mean, we will not approve it, nor will your father. I have already forwarded our decision and our reasons for it to him. He agreed.
Oh, that is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. If I'm a target for terrorists, then it's perfectly clear that escape and evasion is exactly what I need to know. What am I supposed to do if I get kidnapped and need to escape?
The escape segment will be available, at least the urban end.
Fine. So let's say I've broken out of some provincial jail somewhere. Now, I have to cover 100 kilometers to a safe haven, and I have no training.
According to your father, you have had ample training in the basics of survival and navigation in the field, both on Cerealis and on Castle Rock. Your field skills are, in his opinion, and those of our instructors who review the recordings, equivalent to those of most graduates. So the escape segments should fill out your skills very well.
Silence for a moment. Esme wondered if she could just walk past the door now, but even as she moved, Brun stormed out, obviously in a rage. She broke stride when she saw Esme.
You will not believe what just happened in there.
Excuse me, I overheard a little, and I have an appointment.
Brun's eyes widened, but she moved aside. Esme edged past Brun and into the office, where a grim-faced Commander Ulis looked ready to melt bulkheads with his glare.
Sir, Lieutenant Sweezer reporting.
Close the door.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to talk to you about your team assignment. If you overheard much of that, then you know we have concerns about security. Up until last night, we still had orders to accommodate Meager and include her in all the courses, including the field exercise. However, since we now have permission from the highest levels to exclude her and her bodyguards, we need to rearrange team assignments. We're going to split the exercise, and you'll be assigned to a new team, acting commander. I understand you do very well at motivating strangers, Lieutenant.
So the camaraderie she'd built up with her team over the past week would be no use to her. And the team she went to might well resent losing its familiar commander. But at least she wouldn't have Brun to worry about.
Thank you, sir.
Thank me afterwards, if you still can. Remember, your score depends on not only your own successful evasion, but how many of your team make it?
Esme's new team waited for her in the afternoon skills exercise. They had a bored, wary look. They were, she realized, the team that Anton Lavati had led, and Anton had remarked, just too audibly, that he had his doubts about the source of Sweeze's success. Serrano Pet was a phrase she had been meant to overhear. She had ignored it, but these people hadn't. Two women, four men. She ran the names over quickly in her mind. All but one had been in her class in the academy, but she hadn't seen any of them for years, and she hadn't been close to them even then. That afternoon's exercise was deceptively simple. From a scatter of raw materials, improvise a way to cross a series of natural barriers. Each obstacle required not only teamwork, but also innovative thinking. None of the poles were long enough, none of the ropes strong enough, none of the assorted other objects were obviously meant for the tasks at hand. Esme tried being forthright and cheerful, as recommended in the leadership manual, but only some of her new team responded. Lieutenant Taras was inclined to be peevish if her ideas were not accepted the first time. Lieutenant Parad and Jig Berlin could always think of ways for things not to work. By the time the period was over, they had completed only four of the five obstacles. Esme was aware of the frowning instructor, ticking off points on his chart. This team had been ranked first or second in every exercise. Now they wouldn't be. It was possible to request overtime, though it was rarely done because it imposed a 20% penalty on the entire score. Esme raised her hand. Taras shook her head.
Oh.
Esme rounded on her.
We are going to finish this, Lieutenant, if we have to stay here all night.
We can't win! We might as well take the 80% we've got!
And when you need that other 20% of experience, where are you planning to get it? We're completing this exercise and we're doing it now.
Esme expected more resistance, but despite some sidelong, grumpy looks, they tackled the final obstacle with more energy than they had any of the others. 5 minutes later, they had solved the problem. And although Esme halfway expected them to dump her in the mud, they got her over the pit with the same care they expended on each other. By the time they got back to the mess hall, Esme felt she had a chance with this group. A slim chance, but a real one. If only she had a few more days before the field exercise. The next day's prelims went better. Her new team seemed willing to work together again, and they were back up to third in the daily ratings. Esme went to her quarters to pack her gear for the field exercise and try to snatch a few hours of sleep before time to leave. Baron might have stopped by, though she'd hardly seen him for days, except with Brunn. She hoped it was Baron.
I suppose you're proud of yourself.
Excuse me?
You never did want me on your team. You haven't liked me from the beginning. And now you've made sure I can't do the field exercise so you can take over a top team.
I did not. They just assigned me.
Brunn flopped onto the bunk, making a mess of Esme's careful arrangement.
Oh, don't be stupid. You're the heroic Lieutenant Sweeze. They want you to shine, and they've arranged it. Never mind what it does to other people's plans.
Esme could feel her pulse speeding up.
Like yours?
Like mine, like Anton's, like Baron's.
Baron's?
You know, he's really quite fond of you.
Brunn idly prodded a stack of concentrate bars until they collapsed. Two slid off onto the floor. Esme gritted her teeth and picked them up without comment. She did not want this.
I was trying to find out why you're such a cold fish, and I thought maybe he might know. And I'll bet you didn't even know the poor boy's half in love with you.
Esme contemplated for a moment the probable result of pulling out Brunn's tousled gold curls by the roots.
Of course. Such an upright professional as yourself would never stoop to dally with mere ensigns. He, like the rest of us, is far beneath your notice, unless someone gets in your way.
This time, Brunn picked up a water bottle and opened and shut the spout.
That is not fair. I didn't have anything to do with your being taken out of the field exercise.
And I suppose you want me to believe you support me.
No, but that's not the same thing. It wasn't my decision to make.
Brunn gave Esme a challenging glare.
But if it had been...
It wasn't. What might have been doesn't matter.
So true. You might have been a friend. You might have been Baron's lover. Instead...
What do you mean, might have been... someone's lover.
Even as angry as she was, she could not say Baron's name in that context. Not to this woman.
You don't expect him to hang around worshipping your footsteps forever, do you? just in case you might come down from your pinnacle and notice him. Even a bad case of hero worship yields at last to time.
And you, of course, were right there to help him over this unwarranted fixation?
I did my part.
Brunn flipped out the gold curls with a gesture that left no doubt what she meant. Esme had an instant vision of them strewn about the room, little gold tufts of hair like fleece on the shed floor after shearing.
He's intelligent, witty, fun, not to mention incredibly handsome. I thought you'd notice.
A light of unnatural clarity seemed to illuminate the room. Esme felt weightless with pure rage. This to be pursuing Baron. This to displace her, to ruin her relationship with Baron. A young woman who boasted openly of her sexual conquests, who refused to abide by any rules, who claimed to be unafraid of rape.
It's just mechanics. Aside from that, no one can make me pregnant.
Hardly conscious of what she was doing, Esme reached out and lifted Brunn off the bunk and set her against the wall, as easily as she could have picked up a small child.
You playgirl! You come bouncing in here, all full of your genetically engineered brains and beauty, showing it all off, playing with us, playing with the people who are risking their lives to keep you and your wonderful family alive and safe.
Brunn opened her mouth.
You wanted to be friends, you said? What did you ever do but get in my way, take up my time, and go lusting after anyone who caught your fancy? It never occurred to you that some of us have a job to do here? That people's lives, not just ours, will depend on how we do it? Oh no, not you. You want to go play in Q-Town. Someone should go with you. It doesn't matter to you that means learning less. After all, what does it matter if you pass a course or flunk it? It's not your life on the line. You don't care whether you ruin Baron's career or not. You think your money and your family make it all right for you to have anyone you want?
Brunn was white to the lips. Esme didn't care. Her anxiety about the next day, her exhaustion from weeks of extra work, all had vanished in one flash of righteous rage.
You have the morality of a bitch in heat. You have no more spiritual depth than a puddle of mud in a cow pen. And someday, you will need that. And I promise you, Miss Rich and Famous, you will wish you had it, and you will know I'm right. Now get out and stay out. I have work to do!
With that, Esme yanked the door open. She was ready to shove Brunn out, but Brunn stalked past her, under the eyes of her waiting security, who carefully looked at neither of them. The doors were not made to slam, or Esme would have slammed hers. As it was, she restacked her gear with shaking hands, packed it, set it aside, then lay unsleeping on her bunk to wait for the alarm. Brunn stalked along the streets of Q-Town, trying to push her anger back down her throat.
Oh, that stuck-up sanctimonious little bitch. That prissy backcountry chit. Her family probably slops hogs in their bare feet. Just because I grew up rich, just because I can talk about sex without squinching up my face.
In one corner of her mind, she knew this was unfair. Esme was not an ignorant girl, but an accomplished older woman. Not much older, but an academy graduate, a fleet officer, a combat veteran. Brunn would have been glad to have Esme's experience. She wanted Esme's respect.
But not enough to turn into a frumpy sexless joyless!
Esme wasn't joyless, though. Brunn didn't want to be fair. She wanted to be angry, righteously angry. Esme had had no right to ream her out like that, no right to say she had no moral sense. Of course she had moral sense. She had rescued Lady Cecilia, for one thing. Even Esme granted that. Aside from the requisite helling around that all the people in her set went through in adolescence, no one had ever accused her of being immoral. She hunted through her past, finding one instance after another in which she had acted in ways she was sure Esme would approve. Not that it was any of her business. She had protected that little Ponsabar girl at school, the one who had arrived so scared and so easy to bully. She had told the truth about the incident in the biology lab, even though it had cost her a month's detention and the friendship of Otala Moraline. She had been polite to Great Aunt Trima, even when that formidable old lady had regaled guests at the Hunt Ball with tales of little Bubbles cavorting naked in the fountain as a toddler. She'd had to fight off entirely too many of her schoolmates' brothers after that one. But she hadn't turned against Aunt Trima. She and Rafa on the island, they had saved each other's lives. She could not, however, find something to plaster over all the accusations.
Well, so what?
Her standards were different. That didn't mean she had none. Just as her inner voices began to talk about that, she decided she was thirsty and turned into one of the bars that lined the street. Diamond Sims, the sign read. Brun assumed it referred to fake diamonds, with an implication of world weariness. Inside, the tables and booths were full of men and women who might as well have been in uniform as in the mostly drab ship suits now the favorite casual wear for the military. The way they sat, their gestures, all revealed their profession. A few, less than a third, were in uniform. She didn't see any of the students from the courses here. Not that she'd known any, but those in her own section anyway. But she hadn't wanted to see anyone she knew, anyone who would wonder where her bodyguards were. She wanted new faces and a new start, and new proof that she was who she thought she was. With that in mind, she edged past crowded tables to the one double seat empty toward the back. She sat down and touched the order pad on the table. Stenner Ale, one of her favorites, and put her credit cube in the debit slot. She glanced around. On the wall to her right were framed pictures of ships and people, and a display of little metal bits arranged in rows. A faded red banner hung up in the far corner. She could not make out the lettering from where she sat. A waitress deposited her frosted mug and the bottle of ale and gave her a saucy grin.
What ship, hon?
I'm on a course.
The waitress looked slightly surprised, but nodded and went on her way to deliver the rest of the tray to another table. Brun realized that there was another room, apparently private, adjoining the main room. And on her left, the long bar, the same matte black as the stuff covering ship's hulls. Could it possibly be a section of the same material? Above it, suspended from the high ceiling, were ship models. Brun recognized the odd angular shape of a minesweeper among the more ordinary ovoids of the warships. And behind the bar, the expected mirrors were framed with... Her eyes widened. She knew enough about ordnance now to recognize that every frame had once been part of a functioning weapon. In a quick glance around the room, she saw more and more. It was as if the inside of the bar were made of the salvaged pieces of wrecks. She felt the hair rising on the back of her neck, on her arms. It wasn't real. It could not be real. No one would really... But her eye snagged on a display at the near end of the bar. Paradox. That name. She could not forget that name. And here was a plate. An ordinary dinner plate, its broad rim carrying the same dark blue chain design she'd seen on all the dinnerware aboard Admiral Serrano's ship, with the four lozenges that had surrounded the name Harrier. Here, the design inside the lozenges was slightly different, and the plate, sitting on a stand she was suddenly sure had been made of other debris, was brightly lit by a tiny spot that also illuminated the label for those who were too far away to see the lozenges. Beside it was a stack of crockery. Brun looked at the mug holding her ale, suddenly feeling almost sick. No, it wasn't paradox. But now that its frosting had melted, she could see it was etched with some design. She squinted slightly. RSS Balrog. She had been drinking from dead men's cups. She was sitting on a seat made from salvaged bits. Her elbows rested on a table made of... She wasn't sure what, but she was now sure it was something that had been part of a living ship and had been salvaged from a wreck. She looked for clues, and there, in a dull finished plaque set into the tabletop next to the menu screen, she found it. RSS Forge, enlisted bunk 351. A tiny button to one side caught her eye. She pressed it. The menu screen blanked, replaced by a historical note. RSS Forge had been lost 32 years before in combat with the Benignity Strike Force. All hands had died. This fragment had been salvaged 28 years ago and identified by the stamped part number, still on the underside of the table. At the time of the ship's death, enlisted bunk 351 had been assigned to Pivot Lester Green. The table's pedestal, the note went on, was formed of a piece of shielded conduit from the same ship. The two chairs were both from Forge, but one was from the enlisted mess, and the other had been that of the senior weapons tech serving the aft starboard missile battery. The five people who had taken that position during Forge's final battle were all listed. Corporal Dancy Alcorn, Sergeant Tarek Sennett, Corporal Lors Patin, Corporal Barstow Bohannon, Sergeant Gareth Mahari. Bad enough that all the names were listed, real people who had lived real lives and died a real death. But Mahari, she had known Methlin Mahari.
Some relative?
Each name was linked, she realized, to some other information. She didn't want it. She didn't want those names to be any more real than they already were. But Mahari, she had to know. She activated the link. Gareth Mahari had been 26 when he died. His family tree, spread across the screen, with fleet members in blue, was more blue than gray. His parents, both now deceased, one in combat, had been fleet. Of his four sibs, two were active duty fleet and two were married to fleet members. Methlin Mahari was his sister. Hard to think of that tough veteran as anyone's sister. One of his nieces, her niece too, was named after her. So there would be another Methlin Mahari someday, and with both parents and aunts and uncles in fleet, there was every chance that she would go into fleet. Sudden curiosity, and an escape from the weight of tragedy that was making it hard to concentrate, sent Brunn back to the main menu. Sure enough, below the lists of drinks and food, she found data access choices. From this table, she could check on the publicly accessible records of anyone in fleet. Esme. She wondered if there were other Sweezes in fleet. She entered the name and waited. Up on the screen came only one name, and fleet's choice of data for public consumption. Name. She had not known that Esme's full name was Esme Ana Luisa Susanna Sweeza. Planet of origin, Altiplano. Family background. In a few crisp sentences, she was informed that the Sweeza family was one of the three most prominent on Altiplano, that Esme's father was one of the four senior military commanders, that her uncles were two of the others, and that the fourth was considered to be a Sweeza choice, that the military influence on Altiplano's government was profound. Brunn tried to tell herself that a senior military commander on a backwater planet was nothing special. Her father's militia back on Cerealis was just a jumped-up police force. Its commander, though given the title General, had never impressed her as the regulars of fleet did. But Altiplano, she read on, had no seat in council. It had no family connections at all, which meant, she wasn't sure what, but she suspected that a General Sweeza had a lot more power than old General Ashworth. Of Esme herself, there was little. A list of her decorations, with the citations that went with them. Conspicuous gallantry. Outstanding leadership. Outstanding initiative. A list of the ships she'd served on. Her present assignment to Training Command's Junior Officer Leadership Course.
Well.
Brunn sat back, aware of tension in her neck and shoulders. The feeling that she'd got herself in well over her head in more than one way. She returned the screen to its default and thought of ordering a snack. But it would come on a plate from some wrecked ship. She didn't think she could face that. As it was, she already had tears in her eyes.
Something wrong?
Brunn turned. He was stocky, heavy shoulders thick with muscle, his bald head deeply scarred. His eyes were scarcely higher than hers. He was in a hover chair. Brunn kept her eyes from dropping to see why with an effort. But that gave him a clear look at her face. Out of the scarred face, brown eyes observed her with more insight than she liked. His wide mouth quirked.
Lady, you're not fleet and you don't know what you've gotten yourself into, do you?
The lady threw her off stride for a moment. In that pause, he jerked his head toward the farthest angle of the back.
Come on over here. Let's get you sorted out.
She was moving before she realized it, compelled by something in his voice. His hover chair turned and slid between the tables. Brunn followed.
Hey, Sam!
He turned his head slightly. He could not, Brunn realized, turn it all the way, and raised a hand but did not answer. Brunn followed him and found a half booth, enclosing bench and table, with space on the other side for his hover chair.
Sit.
He looked over his shoulder to a waitress.
Get us a pair of Stenners and some chips.
His gaze returned to Brunn, as disturbing as ever.
Oh, I'm not really...
That much I know already, but let's see what you are.
He ticked off points with a stubby finger that looked as if it had been badly molded of plastic.
You're Thornbuckle's daughter, according to your credit chip, and according to the class list over there, you're Brunn Meager, choosing to use your mother's family name. Target of assassination attempts.
Brunn noted the plural and wondered how he knew.
By your instructor's reports, physically agile and strong, bright as a new pin, quick learner, gifted with luck in emergencies. Also emotionally labile, argumentative, arrogant, stubborn, willful, difficult. Not officer material, at least not without a lot of remedial work.
Brunn knew her face showed her reaction to that.
And why not?
You're not fleet. No one in your bloodline's been fleet for over 240 years. You come from a class where social skills are expected in a normal person your age. Yet you come into a fleet bar.
There's nothing but fleet bars in Q-Town.
And not only a fleet bar, a bar with special connotations, even for fleet personnel. Not all of them will come here. Not all of them are welcome here. I've seen kids with what you would call no social background at all come through the door and recognize in one breath that they don't belong here. Which makes me wonder, Brunhilde Charlotte Meager, about someone like you not noticing.
Brunn glared at him. He gazed back, a look neither inviting nor hostile, just looking, as if she were an interesting piece of machinery. That look didn't deserve an answer, even if she had one. She didn't know why she'd ducked into this doorway instead of another. It was handy. She'd wanted a drink. When the thought of a drink and a doorway offering drinks overlapped, she went in. Put that way, it didn't sound as if she were thinking straight. But she didn't want to think about that. Not here. Not now.
You know, we've got security vid outside. When your cube ID popped up on my screen, I ran back the loop. You were stalking along the street like someone with a serious grievance. Then you hitched a step and turned in here with just a glance at the sign. Anyone tell you about this place?
No. I was given a list of places that cater to various specialties, mostly sexual. They have a code of light patterns in the windows, the briefing cube said. Anything else was, well, general entertainment.
Mm-hmm. So just as it seemed on the vid, you were in a rage. Thought of getting a drink and turned into the first bar you saw. Really high-quality thinking for someone of your tested intelligence.
Even smart people can get mad.
Even smart people can get stupid. You're supposed to have a security escort at all times, right? And where are they?
They're...
She wanted to say a royal pain, but knew this man would think that childish.
Back at the schools, I suppose.
You sneaked out.
Yes. I wanted a bit...
Time to yourself, yes. And so you risk not only your own life, which is your right as an adult, but you risk their safety and their professional future because you wanted a little time off. Do you think your assassin is taking time off? Time to have a little relaxation?
Brunn had not thought about her assassin any more than she could help. She had certainly not thought about whether an assassin kept the same hours as a target.
I don't know.
Or what will happen to your guards if you get killed while they're not with you.
I got away from them. It wouldn't be their fault.
Morally, no. Professionally, yes. It is their job to guard you, whether you cooperate or not. If you elude them and are killed, they'll be blamed. So, you got mad and barged in here, ordered, started looking around, noticed the decor.
Yes. Pieces of ships. It's morbid.
Now that young lady is where you're wrong.
It is. What's the point of keeping bits of dead ships and putting people's names on them, if not morbid fascination with death?
Look at me.
Startled, Brunn complied.
Really? Look.
He moved the hover chair back a little and pointed to his legs, which ended at what would have been mid-thigh. Brunn looked, unwillingly but carefully, and saw more and more signs of old and serious injury.
No regen tanks on an escort. It's too small. A buddy stuffed me in an escape pod, and when old Cutlass was blown, I was safely away. By the time I was picked up, there was no way to regrow the legs. Or the arm. though I chose a good prosthesis there. They'd have given me prosthetic legs, too, but I had enough spinal damage that I couldn't manage them. Now, the head injuries.
He dipped his head, showing Brunn the scars that laced his head.
Those were from another battle, back on Pelion, when part of a casing spalled off and sliced me up.
He grinned at her, and she saw the distortion of one side of his mouth.
Now, you, young lady, you don't have a clue what using part of Cutlass's hull as my bar means to me, or to any of the men and women who come here. What it means to have crockery from Paradox and Emerald City and Wildcat, to have cutlery from Defense and Granicus and Lancaster, to have everything in this place made of the remnants of ships we served on, fought on, and survived.
I still think it's morbid.
You ever killed anyone?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have.
Tell me about it.
She could not believe this conversation. Tell him about the island, about Lupescu? But his eyes waited, and his scars, and his assumptions about her ignorance.
We, some friends and I, had taken an air car to an island on Cerealis. It's a planet my father owns.
She didn't like the sound of that now. She wasn't boasting, but it sounded like it. He didn't react.
We didn't know that there were intruders. A man, he was a fleet officer.
Who?
Admiral Lupescu.
Brunn thought she saw a reaction flicker across that scarred face, but she couldn't tell.
He and some friends, at least I was told they were friends, had transported criminals. Well, not really criminals, but that's what they said.
He shifted, with impatience she could almost feel.
Anyway, he and his friends transported these people to the island to hunt. To hunt them, the supposed criminals. Lupescu and his friends stayed on a nearby island, which had a fishing lodge on it, and they flew over every day to hunt. The hunted had cobbled together some kind of weapon and shot down our air car, thinking we were Lupescu. They captured us. When they realized their mistake, we realized that we could all be hunted, and Lupescu would try to cover up his crimes.
And no one knew he was on this planet?
Dad found out later that one of his station commanders had been bribed. There was so much traffic in the system, it was the height of hunting season with lots of guests coming and going, that the others had not noticed an extra ship at one station.
Aha. Go on.
So, Rafa and I went off to an old hideout I remembered from childhood.
Brunn felt herself tense, felt the fine sweat springing out on her skin. She didn't like thinking about that night or the next days. She rattled through the story as fast as possible, how she and Rafa had each killed one of the intruders and acquired their weapons, the discovery that the intruders had poisoned the water, their flight to the cave, and the final confrontation in the cave when Lupescu had been killed by Harris Serrano. The man's expression changed at the mention of Serrano.
So, you yourself actually killed someone who was trying to kill you?
Yes.
And did you enjoy it?
No.
You were scared?
Of course I was scared. I'm not a military freak.
Militaristic crazy?
Brunn stared. Mind reading was supposed to be impossible.
I do wish that somewhere in history people would quit diminishing courage and military personnel by assuming that they aren't subject to normal emotions.
Lupescu didn't seem to have any.
Lupescu was a serious problem. He damn near ruined the Serrano family through Harris. He was probably responsible for more deaths than the enemy in any engagement he had to do with. But he was hardly typical. Even in his own family, there are good officers. Not that any of them will have a career now.
He took a long swallow of his ale, then put the mug down and gave her another straight look.
So, back to you. What put you in a rage?
An argument.
With whom?
Esme Sweezer. She was like you. She thinks I'm just a spoiled rich girl helling around the universe having fun. She had the nerve, the gall, to tell me I have no moral structure to my life.
Do you?
Of course I do.
What then do you conceive as the purpose of your life? What is it that you do to justify your existence? What are you here for?
Put that way, Brunn found the answers that floated into her mind clearly inadequate. She was her father's daughter. She existed to be her father's daughter. No, she didn't want to be just her father's daughter, but she had found nothing else.
I've helped people.
That's nice. Most people have at one time or another. You saved your friend's life on that island. Now, that's a point for you. Is that your mission? Saving people's lives by killing those who want to kill them? If so, I must say you're woefully undertrained for that and overtrained for other things.
I don't know.
You're in your mid-20s now, right? You know, by your age, most people without your advantages are showing more sense of direction than you. Consider the officer you quarreled with. By your age, she had chosen a profession, left home against some resistance to pursue it, and performed capably in her choice. She was not flitting around having adventures.
Just because I'm rich.
Oh, don't try that one on me. It has nothing to do with your wealth. Your father, for instance, shows every sign of being an honorable, hard-working man whose services to the Familias and his own family is his mission. Your sister Clemmy, even before she was married, had chosen to work in an area of medicine where her skills and ability actually served someone else. You, on the other hand, while willing to help out friends, have no consistent direction in your life.
Yes, but...
So I would say Lieutenant Sweezer has the right of it. You are a fine lady, Brunmiga, but you aren't anything else. And someday, if you haven't developed a spiritual muscle, you're going to find yourself in a situation you can't handle and with no tools at all to deal with it.
Brun glared at him, unable to think of anything to say.
All of us here have been in those situations. Brains aren't enough. Physical strength isn't enough. Life will throw things at you that brains and strength can't deal with. Smart people and strong people can both go crazy, or worse, go bad like Lupescu, convinced that whatever they want must be acceptable, or should be acceptable. There must be spiritual strength.
And you think I don't have any?
That's not for me to say. I would have to say you haven't shown any yet. You haven't shown any ability to see yourself as you really are, for instance. And self-examination is one good clue to an individual's spiritual state. You have the capacity, certainly. Anyone does. But you haven't developed it.
Brun drained the rest of her mug of Stenner.
I think you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't any idea what my life has been like, or what I've done. Nor does your wonderful Lieutenant Sweezer. You think being rich had nothing to do with it? Well, let me tell you something. The rich learn early on that you can't trust anyone, anyone but the other rich. And you fleet people are just the same. You don't trust anyone who's not born to fleet. Nothing I did would ever have made any difference. You all decided that I was just a spoiled rich girl from day one, and there was no hope of ever changing your minds. What passes for your minds?
Brun pushed herself away from the table and made her way outside, carefully not meeting anyone's eyes. She had had it. There was no way to do what she wanted to do as long as no one would give her a fair chance. She would leave Copper Mountain. She would figure out for herself what she needed.